Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic taking you through this Wednesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, I've got a pair of tickets to give away to see Nashville SC play against the Columbus Crew on March 21st at Nissan Stadium. Text in, and remember, the keyword is text. Text in to 615-737-1025 if you know the answer to this question. Where did Walker Zimmerman play college soccer? Again, where did Walker Zimmerman play his college soccer? Text in to 615-737-1025. Be the first person to get that question right, and you can win a pair of tickets to see Nashville SC play against the Columbus Crew at Nissan Stadium on March 21st. Joe, it was a big, big win last night for the Nashville Predators against the Montreal Canadiens. 4-2, they've won three games in a row now, and just playing well defensively. I thought again last night defensively, other than maybe a couple of lapses, they looked really good. I mean, Ryan Ellis, it's been amazing to watch how much different this team looks defensively. Number one, under the new way they're playing with John Hines, but number two, with Ryan Ellis coming back and filling that role alongside Roman Josi. Those two together lately have just been so, so good. Now, I mean, you see the points, you see the offense, everything that comes with that, but defensively, they have been lights out as of late.
Yeah, really good. And we knew Ryan Ellis was really good. Ryan Ellis this year is different from Ryan Ellis last year, healthy, although, of course, missed a good chunk of time because of the head injury. Don't want to make excuses, you know, for the inconsistencies of this team and the ups and downs, but just think about if the dirty hit on Ryan Ellis didn't happen, the dirty hit on Victor Arvidsson didn't happen, where would they be right now? They'd probably be in a little bit different spot. So you have to, you know, take all those things into account too when you judge what this season's been. It's been a slog. But 13 games ago, it's starting to look better. I mean, you can't.
Like, are we nervous about saying that?
I think you have to.
We've
be a
been
little
burned
bit.
A few times.
Yeah, you have to be a little bit. It's funny because, like, again, like last night, you know, they're up 4-0, and I tweeted, like, you know, you buying this. And, like, almost immediately, the Canadians scored twice.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, here we go. 5-4.
Our good buddy Brooks Bratton of the Predators, he was tweeting out like the shutout streak for UC Saros after the second period.
Yeah.
And you just read all these replies about, how in the world could you do that? You're going to jinx everything. And he's like, jinxes aren't real, which is true. I mean, that's the most ridiculous thing in sports.
But it was funny,
like 2 minutes into the third period, Montreal scores, and just the replies for Brooks and his tweet there. It was awesome.
Oh, got ratioed.
How you jinxed him.
I'll have to go find that so I can add my voice to the ratio. And the goal that broke the shutout streak was, you know, just a bad bounce off the board. I mean, just bad luck, you know. They gave up another goal. Then you think, oh, do the Canadians actually have a little life? And they had some coverage issues on that one. But, they're much better defensively. They've just been sound, solid, communicating, making fewer mistakes, turning it over less. I don't know. That's a number that I expect you or Mr. Farch, Adam Vingan, to have. But, like, to me, it feels like the turnovers, you know, in the defensive zone have gotten a lot less.
Yeah.
Can we find this out statistically?
We can. I mean, Forsberg, as good as he played last night, he did have a brutal turnover in the defensive zone where you're just like, oh, man, that is not good.
Forsberg will do that.
He'll do that every now and then trying to make the play. But you're right. I think you can see that that's gone down. And you hear John Hines talk about puck management all the time. Puck management. You got to be better with the puck. Got to make better decisions with where you're going with the puck. A lot of that, of the issues, I think, earlier on in the season with that were, you know, when you're trying to break out of the zone, you've got all these stretch passes you're trying to complete. I mean, that can be hard to do when you're trying to break out of the zone that way. I think they tried to make their routes little simpler getting out of the zone, getting them to their forwards quickly, and making sure that they're not trying like these 155-foot stretch passes to spring them in the zone. You'll still see it every now and then, but I think that's been a big reason why they've cut down on those turnovers a little bit, and that's obviously very important. The more you can manage the puck effectively and get it into the zone, you're going to have better chances at that point. Number one, to set up your own offense, but it may be more importantly, stop those rushes and those odd man attempts coming back the other way. And I agree, they've been really good at that lately. I mean, defensively, look, offensively, we've talked all season long, especially since Hines has taken over, the production from your star forwards maybe not where it should be. Defensively, I think they've started to make a lot of strides there, and the goaltending deserves credit. UC Soros has been really good, but I think defensively they've looked a little bit better as of late, and they're not giving up those grade-A looks like they were for the most part. There have been exceptions. Obviously, the Edmonton game comes to mind. There have been a couple more exceptions along the way, but by and large, defensively, they're starting to play a lot better, and that's how you got to play as playoff hockey starts to become more and more the style in which teams are adjusting and the way that they're playing.
Yeah, I mean, if you're comfortable in that style, I think that suits you going into the postseason. I mean, there's still different matchups and different types of games in the playoffs, but for the most part, you know, teams are going to be, your opponents are going to be more like that. They're going to be more sound and less willing to make less likely to make the big mistake in the defensive zone. So you got to be that way too. Johnny De Silveira tweets at us, props to Coach Hines for calling that timeout after the second half's goal. That probably was a good move. Just kind of, okay, reset.
Yeah.
Everybody calm down. You're in control. You know, you don't want to, because that place,
it can get a little overwhelming at times.
You know, they're not good. They haven't been really good in a while, but it's still Montreal. It is the center of the hockey universe. If Toronto isn't, I guess you could debate that. But I mean, you're talking about a place with incredible tradition, history, and fans. So,
and you could do a little bit of lip reading while that was going on. A word that kept coming up from John Hines was execute. I mean, he said it like five times on the bench. And you mentioned the first goal being a little bit of a bad bounce. The second goal, I mean, it was basically a slam dunk for Montreal there. And it's the bad defensive zone coverage at that point. I think puck management was an issue for a little bit in that game, and that was John Hines just saying, look, you played really well up until this point. Let's not give this away here in the third period. And they did a much better job after that of responding and playing the right way.
It's overdone, especially after like a bad game. You know, it's overdone that people will rush the defense of a goaltender and say, ah, it's the defense. I mean, you know, a goaltender's teammates are always going to do that. They're always going to say, nah, it's on us. It's not on the goalie, right? In this case, I mean, neither of those goals, Soros should have had another shutout because he made some big time saves, and neither of them, I think you could put on him at all. Like, they were basically just, dunks. So in this situation, that's not on him. And so that's two shutouts plus a really, really excellent performance for him. He's rolling. Here's my question, Robbie. One thing as I look forward, who plays when this weekend?
Yeah, I mean,
they probably save him for Minnesota, right?
I would think so. Probably go Pekka on Saturday night against Columbus, and then play Soros on Sunday at Minnesota. That'd probably be the route I would take in that area. So, going to be interesting to follow what they do there. Joe, real quickly, SEC tournament beginning play today. Vanderbilt with a game tonight against Arkansas. And typically you go into these matchups on the first day of the tournament and you're like, okay, let's just do our best to get through this day because it's typically bad basketball. I don't really expect that to be the case between Vanderbilt and Arkansas tonight. I think Vanderbilt's been trending in the right direction to close out their season. And Arkansas, even though the record's not probably where they think it should be in terms of their talent, they're still very, very good and very capable when they're on.
Arkansas 1-5 without Isaiah Joe, and had he not been hurt, I think they'd be an absolute easy NCAA team, and they're a really offensively gifted, talented team. Mason Jones is an unbelievable player. So that against Vandy, both teams are kind of small, athletic type teams. Vanderbilt very limited, but Saban Lee has just been playing out of his mind. So I'm excited about this game tonight. I think it's going to be really entertaining, and it's a tall task for Vanderbilt. Now, if Vanderbilt can get through this game, they would play South Carolina, who they just beat. They would play LSU, who they've already beaten.
Yep.
You know, to try to get
go win the tourney,
to
baby.
Go get, hey, win five in a row. What a story that would be. But this one is going to be really tough for Vanderbilt, and they're going to have to play really excellent team defense on those guards tonight, because Jones can get wherever he wants to go, and Joe can hit from 35 if he wants. You know, it should be, I think, a high-scoring, entertaining game.
No question about it. So going to be interesting to follow what happens, whether or not Vanderbilt can handle that tonight as SEC play begins in the tournament here in Nashville. When we come back, Philip Forsberg looks like he's starting to get rolling a little bit offensively. We'll get into that. If you have thoughts on the Preds, give us a call, 615-737-1025. But first, Preds fans, starting today at 7:45, so it's now underway, you can bid on a Smashville VIP package with proceeds benefiting Tornado Relief and the Preds Foundation. That package includes two tickets to Preds and Threads on March 17th, with parking included in that package, two tickets to the VIP after party, and a team autographed jersey. Also, two lower-level tickets to see the Preds play against the Philadelphia Flyers on March the 21st. And before that game, you can also have dinner with Pete Weber and Hal Gill. Who wouldn't want to do that before that game on March 21st? Two Nashville Strong t-shirts also included in the package. So a whole lot there that you can bid on and win. And, of course, those proceeds benefiting Tornado Relief here in Nashville. If you're interested in bidding on the Smashville VIP package, text PREDS to 615-737-1025. Again, that's text PREDS to 615-737-1025. The bidding will close at 7:45 p.m. tonight. We'll be right back on Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. The opposition certainly cannot touch Philip Forsberg right now in the last three games. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad. Marquise Munson spinning the hits behind the glass. Joe, there was a point like 2 weeks ago where Forsberg was getting chances left and right, and I thought to myself, like, okay, who has like the voodoo doll of Philip Forsberg? Who is messing with him where he's just not going to score ever again? And you mentioned when he finally broke through the other night and got that goal, right before that, Roman Josi, I mean, he just served one up on a platter to him. It was right there. The net was wide open against the Stars on Thursday night, and he just shanked it, sent it wide, and I was like, oh, man. Like, I think I looked over at you and Adam and was like, he's never going to score again. That's it. Like, he's not going to score another goal the rest of the year. And then, of course, like two or three minutes later, he scores on the power play. Two goals for him last night, an assist last night, and one of those goals, I think, just totally shows the confidence that I think is back in his game. He just ripped that first goal he scored last night on the power play. There wasn't a goaltender in the league that was going to stop that shot.
Yeah, no, that was like a, Forsberg type play. And, yeah, sometimes it just takes one to just trickle through for you, and all of a sudden, The net looks bigger, I guess.
Yeah, I guess you so.
So there are a few things this team would like more than for him to go on a tear, because that's what he does. He goes on tears.
He does go on tears, and I believe he became the first Predators player in franchise history to score at least 20 goals in six consecutive seasons. Last night with his goal, it was his 20th of the season, and then scored the other one, which was his 21st of the season. So a nice string of consistency in terms of production for Philip Forsberg over the course of the last six seasons. Also, as our good friend Johnny pointed out on Twitter, became tied with Shea Weber. I believe 166 goals he's scored now in his career, all with the Predators. Good for second most in franchise history, tied with Shea Weber. So interesting that he ties Shea Weber last night in a game where they're playing against Shea Weber in Montreal, still chasing David Legwan for the most goals in franchise history. I don't think it's going to be that long before he catches up to David Legwan. I think Legwan's maybe at 215, somewhere around there. Next year or two, Forsberg will get that. You would think, anyway.
And recently passed Martin Erat.
Yeah.
Which that was
a lot of fanfare there.
Kind of surprised me. I didn't realize. I mean, I knew Erat was a pretty good player here, but I didn't realize he would have been that high on the all-time goal list. And, of course, that's a trade.
He's around for a while.
That's a trade that I would think, go down pretty high on David Poile's list.
It's got to be near the
top. Of all-timers, right?
I mean, that was you don't see trades like that happen very often, where one team just totally robs the other. But that certainly happened. Philip Forsberg, been a very valuable member, obviously, of the Nashville Predators since his time here. If they can get him going and getting him into one of these hot streaks that you talked about, Joe, where he's scoring goals with regularity, we've seen it in the past. He can score a whole lot of goals in a very short amount of time. I mean, that could be the difference in you making the playoffs or not down the stretch, especially when if he can get hot against some of these teams that you're playing against, like Minnesota, Winnipeg, Arizona, that are right there with you in the race. They need Philip Forsberg to keep this up because he's a guy, I'd put him in maybe the one or two guys they have at the forward position, maybe three when they're all on, that could really take over a game. And he's starting to show signs, at least, of maybe getting to that point right now.
Yeah, there's nobody who can do exactly what he does on this team, which is just, you know, the power forward kind of thing. And, of course, you think about Ryan Johansson and when he gets in there and mixes it up and gets physical, gets in the hard areas and all that stuff and creates for others. But Forsberg just is a scoring threat. Every different, you know, the different ways he can score goals, and when he's feeling it, you know, you just don't know how he's going to attack you, and you know, he might just do something that's just ridiculous, and he might just snap one, and you know, it's just that thing when you're feeling good. I mean, his shot percentage now is what, 10-6 now, yep, this year. You know, it's fine, but when he's in those hot streaks, it's all of a sudden it's like 17-18 or whatever. Yeah. You know, I mean, you have that, just that little extra filth. The filth. Yes. That is better than farch.
Wow.
That is better than farch. We're retiring.
We don't
farch.
Like the
I'm
farch.
Sorry,
for those of you who missed it, Adam Vingan of The Athletic, you know, we talk all the time about February, that being the month of February, how Forsberg takes over. Obviously, that didn't happen this year without him scoring a goal in the month of February. March has gotten off to a good start. Three goals in the first three games, and Adam Vingan dubbed it Farch in honor of Philip Forsberg. I don't really know if we can go with that.
Yeah, someone come up with something better. I don't know what you can do, you know, with March. Marchberg, that just doesn't really. But Farch can't be it, man.
I mean, usually Vingan is better than this. I feel like
Filch.
This is
no,
beneath
that
him.
Can't be it. Filch can't be it either.
It's better than Farch.
Farch, yeah. Yeah, let's get rid of all
let's
that.
Let's see if we can't help that out. Yeah,
but no. You'd rather have him have these months in March than in February.
Yeah, I mean, the closer you can get to the playoffs when he can get hot, you feel pretty good about that. 615-737-1025 if you've got thoughts on the Preds. We'll take them. Send them your calls, your texts, whatever you got. 615-737-1025. One of the things that stood out to me last night, Joe, when I was – done watching the game, I looked at the stat sheet. Obviously, the 3 points jump out, two goals and one assist for Forsberg. The time on ice, 20 minutes and 11 seconds, because I think it was like the Dallas game over the weekend. There were only like three or four guys at the forward position that had less ice time than Philip Forsberg. And you're thinking, oh, man, that probably shouldn't be the case. 20 minutes and 11 seconds for him last night in Montreal. That's more like it. That's about where you think he would be, especially at this time of the year, with the games being as important as they are.
Yeah, it's an indication. Again, not just that now maybe he's heating up. Oh, he scored two goals. It's an indication that what he's doing to put himself in position to score is what John Hines wants to see. John Hines is pretty clear about, he's not that all coaches aren't like this, but process. He's a process guy,
yeah,
right? Do this, 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 and then this can result from it. The fact that he scored is not why he got 20 minutes of ice time. It's the fact that he's doing things that are, you know, making that possible or more likely.
Let's go to Kevin, who wants to weigh in on the Preds. Kevin, go ahead. Thanks for calling in to ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Love you guys' show. Hey, my question is, do you think that we'll ever see the Jofa line again now that Phil's getting hot and Arvey's doing better? What's your comments on the lineup with Colton Sissons and Yarncroc on the top line? Is that, do you think that's kind of a going to continue, or what's your thoughts on the lineups?
And yeah,
I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks for the call, Kevin.
It's a good question.
We saw it for about 6 seconds last night with Johansson's goal.
And they scored.
They did score. I mean, it was very efficient from them last night
If they score every 6 seconds, I think you got to put them back
together.
You got to
put them back together at that point, think.
What, I mean, seriously, why not consider it? What if you did that? I mean, obviously you have repercussions on other lines.
Yeah.
But, man, I feel like it's worth – if they're all playing well and you like what they're doing, then you could say, yeah, but look, you know, they're with these lines and they're playing well. But I don't know. To me, it would be worth a look at some point.
Oh, I think so. Look, and eventually we got to get to the point where Ryan Johansson, and this is no disrespect to these guys, but we got to get to a point where Ryan Johansson is playing with guys other than Colton Sissons and Cali Yarncroke, Austin Watson, Colin Blackwell. Like, those guys have a clearly defined role on this team, and as does Ryan Johansson as well. And to me, those two don't really overlap. And I get why that happened. I get why he was playing with those guys, because Johansson hasn't been good this year. He's needed to be better.
That's the thing. That's not really the top line, is the thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's really not.
I mean, Johansson's the center, and yeah, so he's technically the number one center, but it's not really your top line when right, that's your line.
Yeah. So, look, I think as we go down the stretch here, if you're John Hines, you've got to start thinking about, okay, where am I going to play Ryan Johansson? Who am I going to put him with to put him in the best possible position to start to make a run of things down the stretch here and to be productive offensively? I think you like some of the combinations he's put out there recently. I like Kyle Turris playing, you know, with Arvidsson. I think that's good. I've liked when Philip Forsberg has been with Matt Duchene, yeah, regardless of who's been on that other wing. I think they've looked good together. So I understand maybe you don't want to put those three guys together in kind of fear, I guess, for lack of a better term, of what it would do to the other lines. But, I mean, at some point, you've got to put Johansson in a position where he can be productive offensively on a consistent basis. And then at that point, it's up to him to do it.
Well, these lines have seemed like, you know, attempt to get very balanced, four balanced lines. Not clearly like, here's two scoring lines, here's a checking line. It's more like you've got people who do different things on all of them.
Yeah.
As you get closer to the postseason, do you want it to be more defined? Like, here, we're going to load up top six forwards. That's what, you know, that's what a lot of teams do. They have two lines that they look for offense from. I don't know. I mean, so far, that's not what John Hines has done. But does he think differently nearer to or in the postseason?
Yeah, going to be interesting to find out. Look, we've talked for a long time here about the top players playing to that level. When we come back, we'll talk about that. It seems like they're getting signs and showing some signs of doing that on a more consistent basis. We'll get into that next. If you've got Preds thoughts, give us a call, 615-737-1025. Also, take your text messages on the text line. But first, 1025 The Game. We'll be broadcasting live from Barrel House in Bridgestone Arena starting at 2 o'clock today with Jared and the GM with Nashville's best SEC tournament coverage, which is brought to you by your Middle Tennessee Toyota dealers and Wyatt Johnson Ford. So looking forward to that at 2 o'clock with Jared and the GM today at Bridgestone Arena. We'll be right back. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad. And Joe, three in a row for the Predators. Things are going well right now, playing well. Shutouts in two of them. UC Soros had a shutout last night until the third period where Montreal scores two goals. So they've given up two goals in their last nine periods of hockey. That's pretty good. Playing pretty well defensively right now. Got to be really encouraging for them as they head down the rest of this week here, starting tomorrow night against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Let's go to Jerry, who has called in wanting to weigh in on the Predators. Jerry, thanks for calling in to ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Yeah, y'all, we're looking to change the name of what to call Forsberg's approach on March.
That's right.
I would call it the Forest March.
Oh, yeah, I like that. That's certainly better than Farch.
You don't want to go into the forest alone without your buddies.
You don't want to go into the forest alone without your buddies. There's no question about that. That's a ton better than Farch.
It is better than Farch.
Your creativity has been a lot better than Adam Vingan's as of late. So thank you for that, Jerry.
And I love the mix-up because they're actually playing for each other instead of as individuals.
Yeah, they are. Absolutely. Thanks for the call, Jerry. I like that. That's better than Farch.
Yes.
Sam came up with, or in the back, just came up with Final Forsberg as a nickname for the month of March, obviously tying in the NCAA tournament as well. That also is better than Farch.
That's not bad. You got to think about it a little bit. But
sometimes creative thought,
yeah,
that helps.
The words work together, so yeah. And who knows? There may not be a Final Four.
May not
be. So he will have to suffice.
Absolutely. 615-737-1025 if you've got thoughts on the Preds. Joe, we've started, I mean, we've talked about it for like the last month. The big name players on this team, they've got to start to find a way to produce. And lately, they've done that a little bit better. Not great still. There's still probably another level they can get to. But Forsberg with three goals so far in the month of March. Matt Duchene scores the other night against Dallas. Follows it up with an assist against Dallas on Saturday. Victor Arvidsson has assists in three straight games. And Ryan Johansson finds the back of the net last night. So while they're still not there yet, those four guys that we've talked about in terms of being more productive and more consistently dangerous are at least starting to show a pulse and a sign that maybe they're finding their games a little bit more at the right time of the year.
When's the last time any of those guys was clearly, I don't want to say in the doghouse, but, you know, was clearly sort of set aside by Hines in a game because he didn't like how they were playing? When's the last time?
It's been a little bit now. I mean, that happened with regularity during the first few weeks of John Hines' tenure.
I mean, I'm trying to think of the game where it was like, was it Vancouver? Was it Vancouver, or am I thinking of a different game where it was like basically he just benched them all?
Oh, that was definitely
all.
Vancouver, yes.
That was Vancouver. Yeah. So, you know, and again, it wasn't that long ago. They lost 8-3 to Edmonton, and John Hines spared, you know, he pulled no punches after that. It was not long ago. And this team has had these stretches, and they'll play well, and then all of a sudden you'll just have the absolute clunker come out. But I feel like there's a consistency with the team that's starting to show, and also with those guys. I just can't remember last time I thought, oh, man. I mean, Johansson is still the guy you want more from always. You always do. He scored last night. Great for him to get on the board. Still think that if you go shift after shift after shift after shift with Johansson,
yeah,
there's probably more there. There's not probably more there. There is more there. There's more there from him that you want to see. But good to see him get on the board. And, again, if you're Johansson and you score that goal with that, what did you say, 6 seconds with
like
those guys?
6 seconds of
ice. Like, you have to be thinking in your head, gee, what if you guys put me with some different guys?
Hinesy, did you see who was out there with me when I scored that goal there? I mean, at least it has to cross your mind.
I mean, he has 35 points, which is crazy. Yeah. It's got to be better than that.
Got to be.
36 points. But you could also say for him, man, you know, it's hard to be a productive playmaker if you don't have top six forwards to pass to. So it's kind of like if he switches it up and puts Johansson with different people, that's another indication the other way from Hines that he likes what he's doing. He's still the focal point.
So we've got some great suggestions coming in on the text line about nicknames for this month and Philip Forsberg. March Forbesness has come in, again playing off the NCAA tournament, the Fours of March instead of the Ides of March.
Ooh.
I like this. Somebody writes in, this may be my favorite. Since his nickname is Scoresburg, how about just Scorch for March? Scorch. I mean, the possibilities are endless here.
Like you have
All
to,
of these are better than Farch.
Yeah, like you have to think about that one, but that is way better than what about Scorchberg?
Scorchberg.
I mean, then you tie it to him,
but
it's still the March to the CH. Scorchberg?
I like it.
That might actually be okay.
Maybe we will officially dub this month as Scorchberg, if he continues on this path. I mean, we're only three games in. He's still got a long way to go, and there's a ton of games coming up this month for the Nashville Predators. But so far, so good for Philip Forsberg during the month of Scorchberg, which Joe Rextrode has just decided here on Morning Drive is the official name for it.
Scorchberg?
That's probably
that's
too much.
That's too much.
See, we had a good thing with Scorchberg.
It's just like,
and now
Scorchberg
it.
Still, it's hard. Like, you don't automatically know you're talking about a month, you know? But it's hard. The February is just way easier.
It's set up for much more success than the month of March.
Yeah, but Scorchberg, that's
I like it. Yeah, I think we're going to go with
that. That's the best one.
Arvidsson, and we talked about this a little bit earlier in the show, I don't think he's quite there yet in terms of fully being back with his speed, but I think he's getting closer. Like you said, I don't know if it's realistic to expect that Arvidsson at any point this year is going to get all of it back in terms of the speed that he has. But I think there's been signs that he's been getting better in that area. He's more dangerous around the net. He has been more productive offensively. We mentioned assist in three straight games. If he can start to get rolling from a goal-scoring standpoint, whether that's on the power play, five-on-five, whatever situation it is, that's going to be fun to see because we haven't really seen that this year. I mean, he's got hurt. Even before he was hurt in St. Louis, he didn't quite look like the same guy. And since he's come back, obviously, we still, in our minds, and we don't know this, I think he's probably not 100% healthy at this point just based off of the foot speed that we see out there. He's even talked about it. He doesn't have the same speed that he's grown accustomed to having. But if he can find a way to start to get that back, that provides an element with this team that they haven't really had for most of this year. I mean, Grimaldi's fast. Craig Smith is fast at the forward position. You know, other guys have good speed. Like, Forsberg's not slow. Johansson can move. Duchesne's fast. But, like, nobody really classified as, like, the burner you think of when you think of Grimaldi and Arvidsson. If he can get that back, that could be really big for this team.
Yeah, because you pair that with, I mean, look, Arvidsson used to be every shift you had to watch him because he was going to do something. I mean, he set the standard for, you know, just effort and pesky play, and is he making something happen all the time, every shift. And part of that is just mindset and how he plays the game. Part of it is, though, that he's faster than most guys, and so then, you know, you turn it into something. I don't know if he's going to get that full speed back. Obviously, hopefully for him, he will get it back at some point. I mean, you still think this is related to the cross-check to the lower back. But I agree. I think it looks like he's got a little more burst. And the more of that you can get, certainly that helps a lot.
Got a text in on the text line that says, if the Preds keep winning and Dallas keeps losing, can you see them sliding up into the sixth spot, which would be the third spot in the Central Division? Look, this time last week, I would have told you that was probably going to be borderline impossible. But Dallas has gone on a skid. They've lost six games in a row. And all of a sudden, you look up, and the Preds are just 4 points behind the Dallas Stars in the Central Division. So Dallas keeps sliding. Preds are 4 points behind. Both have played 69 games through the season. I mean, obviously, winning against them twice in regulation, that helps close that gap significantly. But that hasn't really been something we've considered up until this point in the season. It's just been like in a dogfight to get in the wild card spots, which still, that's going to be challenging for the Predators down the stretch. You got to make sure you're maintaining this level of play. But all of a sudden, that third spot, not so far out of the realm of possibility anymore.
Right. But then you got to ask yourself, do you, because, you know, you're if you're in the third spot, you don't have home ice. So you got to ask yourself if you like the idea of a little matchup with the Avs, which right now in second place, although the Avs game in hand on the Blues and only 2 points behind them. But I think you got to ask yourself, too, if you'd like a Blues series, even though you've handled them this year, they were supposed to have Tarasenko back. That's a big deal for the Blues to get him back. So is it better to be one of the wildcard teams and maybe, like, go play Vegas?
Maybe.
I guess you're just going to do as well as you can do and get in. But the Avs have been, you know, tough.
They've
for the
been
Preds.
Really good this year.
But, hey, the Stars were tough for the Preds until they just shut them out two games in a row, too, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good problem to have if you're the Predators and talking about potential playoff discussions that don't involve the last two wildcard spots. That's a much better position than you were in this time a couple weeks ago. So we'll see how that goes as they continue to go down the stretch here. When we come back, Diana Russini had some interesting reports and thoughts yesterday about Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill on ESPN. We'll get into those next. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Diana Russini yesterday on ESPN talking about Ryan Tannehill potentially coming back with the Tennessee Titans. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. And Joe, this has been all over ESPN, all over the different shows that they have in terms of, is Brady going to go to the Titans? Is Brady's relationship with Vrabel ultimately going to be the difference in him leaving New England and going to join the Titans? And we've seen this go round and round and back and forth. We talked about it here on the show. And then you hear Russini go on the show yesterday and starts talking about how the Titans, she feels like, are trying right now to really close in on a deal with Ryan Tannehill, which I think is what you and I have always said is the most likely option. When you hear that, what's kind of your reaction to it based off her comments there?
Well, first of all, fans and media around here are going to be skeptical about Diana Russini based on a couple things she got wrong last year. I think one of them was something about A.J. Brown returning punts. Like, you know, yeah. It really doesn't matter to me. The big thing was the Tannehill, you know, preseason thing, which I think is almost a case of, like, I believe that Diana talked to someone in the Titans organization and heard positive things about Tannehill and skepticism about Mariota, which all totally makes sense.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, it got misconstrued as Tannehill could be the starter to start the season.
There was
never a chance of that. I mean, again, so all of us who were here covering the team in camp every day are like, okay, so Mariota gets every single rep with the ones. This is his prove it year. They picked up his option. He's making $20.9 million this year, but they're just going to bench him to start the season. Yeah. It's just like it was just wrong, and we all knew it was wrong. And so she took a lot of a lot of guff for that, and sort of responded a little bit on social media. And I'm trying to remember now. There was another reporter, and you know, someone out there can remind me out in Denver who said similar, and then said, sort of like
did Benjamin
like,
Albright.
Albright, and so he's like, "Oh, I told you so." Like when Tannehill took over in Denver, and he was there. It's like, no, but
you said that was going to happen in September.
No one said it wasn't possible for Tannehill to get the job at some point. Of course, it was possible, but everyone knew he was not going to have the job to start the season. So anyway, so Russini, there will be some, you know, some skepticism about what she says. But look, I think that what she said in the preseason was based on conversation with someone in the Titans organization. I think what she says right now is what I've believed throughout all this, that Tannehill's the preferred quarterback for the Tennessee Titans. So I think it makes sense to me.
And Diana Russini had more comments regarding the Titans and free agency yesterday on ESPN. Here's what she had to say.
Lots of Ryan Tannehill talk, but what about the Titans with Derrick Henry? What's the plan there?
Yeah, the Tennessee Titans have a lot of decisions to make because they need to pay their quarterback, but they also need to pay the reason why this team went so far in the playoffs, and that's Derrick Henry. From what I've been told, it seems that they're going to be able to work out a deal, and Derrick Henry's going to have a payday in Tennessee.
So I don't think a huge surprise there that she's reporting that it looks like the Titans are going to be able to work out a deal with Derrick Henry. I think we've often said this offseason that he's one of those guys, and we get the position is what it is, and the running back position certainly valued differently in today's NFL as a whole than it has been in the past. But Derrick Henry just seems like to us one of those guys where, with how important he is to your offense, basically the identity of your offense runs through him, you've got to find a way to get that deal done. I know we had John Glennon on, and he talked about, you know, maybe you think about franchising Derrick Henry and going that route. But I still think the most likely scenario is they sign him to a 3 or 4 year deal and ride it out with Derrick Henry that way. And based on what Russini is saying there, she feels the same way.
Yeah, I think the thing with the franchise, sometimes you can franchise someone and the average of the top five at the position makes that year good for them. Like Tannehill gets franchised, I think it's 27 range. I believe that's right. No, it's a good year. Good year for Tannehill, $27 million. You'll take that. You know, if you're Derrick Henry and you get franchised, it's not just that you got tagged, you know, and you have an option to play like 1 year, which of course as a running back, you want as much security and length of contract as you can get, but also you're going to get paid, I think 12.7 is the number. So you're also taking, I think, a couple million off the table for him based on what he has demonstrated as his value, and people can argue the other way on that because he's a quote-unquote two-down back. But I think that would be – I think that would not make Derrick Henry happy, and I wouldn't blame him for not being happy. Ultimately, you got to make the decision. You got to make business decisions, and you got to try to project how guys are going to react to him, and you don't really know until you do it. But I think Derrick Henry should and will be signed to a multi-year deal. And then we'll see if they do, in fact, tag Tannehill. I think the more likely tag candidate is Tannehill.
Yeah, I would agree with that as well. And look, we see this happen all the time. It's happened here with the Titans, where a running back signs for a big money contract, and they're just not the same after that. Chris Johnson signed, and his production wasn't quite the same after he signed the new deal. Now, in fairness, his production before that, including a season where he had 2,006 yards rushing and led the NFL in total yardage, that's probably not a very realistic expectation to keep that bar at 2,000 yards, but his production dropped off significantly. Do we worry about that at all with Derrick Henry? And from a mindset guy, he doesn't really seem like that would be the case. But sometimes it's not as simple as mindset. There are a lot of other factors that go into it. Do we worry about that at all being the case with Derrick Henry if he signs a big deal?
Yeah, you worry about everything, of course. You're not going to feel – if they do this, first of all, a lot of people are going to say, what are you doing? Look at recent second contracts or running backs and how they've flopped, this guy, that guy. And, of course, you worry. You don't know. But a couple things that I think make him different, maybe not different from a lot of guys, but I think make it safer. One is, you mentioned mindset. I think that is important. Like Derrick Henry, to me, is a guy who's going to be lifting trucks and whatever the heck he does, you know, dragging tires up hills and being in unbelievable shape no matter what his situation in life is.
Okay? If you pay attention to his off-season workouts on Instagram, there's a lot of heavy lifting going on right there.
They're very much like Jared Stillman's.
The box jumps all over the place.
Stillman, by the way, has told me he's ripping my Vanderbilt column on Candace Lee today on the show later. So I'm text battling with Stillman as we speak. Anyway, Derrick Henry, you've got that, and you've got durability. It's such a big deal, and it doesn't guarantee durability next year, the year after that, but got a pretty good idea now that he's able to go out there, deliver punishment, not take a ton of it, even though he's a power runner, and not get hurt. He had a hammy thing this year. Sat out a game, came back like he had just come off an off season and ran all over the Texans, who admittedly were not playing for anything. But still, he looked great, and he looked great in the playoffs. And he's had nothing else, really. He had a little, whatever that, I forget what it was, some kind of a strain, you know, in the preseason. And, of course, they're going to be careful with
Yeah.
him. Durability. So durability and just the shape. And, again, his mindset, his approach to this. Everybody, a lot of guys talk team first. A lot of guys talk about it. Team. It's not about me. Yeah, I think Derrick Henry has demonstrated it, including how he reacted to 2 years after winning the Heisman, being a second-round pick, to 2 years of being a backup to DeMarco Murray. He was an apprentice, and he was happy with the playing time he got, and I never detected any sort of discontent there. So those things do matter when you're talking about giving a guy like that a big deal. I understand the warnings with running backs, but I think he's different.
Got a text in on the text line that says, Chris Johnson was fragile as far as the game taking a toll on his speed
yep.
and change of direction. Henry will adjust much easier to damage done to his body. And the other part of that, I agree totally with what the texter said there. The other part of that, oftentimes Derrick Henry is the one doing the damage, not receiving the damage. That's just his running style and how he plays the game.
Yeah. I mean, you still think about, like, if there's big hits, even if you're delivering it, like, there's a toll on you. Like, the idea, you think about a guy like Barry Sanders who just had some – he just never took a big hit, you know, because it was hard to get him down in the first place. This is not that. There's heavy contact, but I do think if you're the deliverer rather than the delivery, then you're better off.
No question about it. When we come back, our good friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports will join us. We'll break down all things Titans, and we'll get into a little CBA talk as well with him coming up next. But first, tune in tonight to Smashville Live at 7 o'clock, featuring SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey and Preds President and CEO Sean Henry. This Smashville Live is at Bridgestone Arena and will not be open to the public. But make sure you're tuning in at 7 o'clock. Should be a very good show. Smashville Live brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine. We'll be right back with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports here on Morning Drive, live from the Wholesale Inc. studio, powered by RumbleOn.com.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell, and when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNCs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.